This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, welcome to Washington Watch. My name is Janet Mefford. I'm in today for Tony Perkins, and I come to you from the city of Dallas, where we are reeling, as all of America is, over last night's massacre of five police officers and the wounding of several more officers and civilians. This happened, as we know, during a rally in downtown Dallas to protest the shooting deaths of Alton Sterling in Louisiana and Philando Castile in Minnesota. Now, we know from the police chief of Dallas who this suspect was, Micah X. Johnson, killed by the detonation of robotic bombing devices last night. He was upset about Black Lives Matter, the chief said. He was upset about the recent police shootings. He was upset at white people. He wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. This all happened, of course, just hours after the president delivered a message on the disparate treatment of the races by the criminal justice system. And today, both President Obama and Attorney General Loretta Lynch are jumping on the gun control bandwagon, as predictably expected. And so we're going to talk about all of this today as much as we can with Mark Walters. Mark is the host of Armed American Radio, a good friend, and we're just so delighted he could join us here today on Washington Watch. Mark, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Janet. I appreciate it very much.
Well, absolutely. We're learning more now about this killer, this Micah X. Johnson. There's this widely disseminated picture of this killer on the internet today doing his Black Power fist. And I was shocked. I was reading this just a few minutes ago. His sister, Nicole Johnson, posted a message on Facebook criticizing police and suggesting that I, for one, this is a quote, I, for one, think these cops need to get a taste of the life we now fear. Just amazing, isn't it? Five police officers killed, and that's the reaction. And then we have a reaction that what we really need is gun control.
Predictable. Both, on both counts, predictable.
Yeah. Just
the actions in Dallas today, couldn't tell you where it was going to happen, but could predict that it was going to happen. The more emboldened, Janet, that the Black Lives Matter movement has become because of the support from people like Barack Obama, Attorney General Lynch, and others, combined with the fact, and this is such a difficult conversation to have, it really is, because it is so sad and it is so ugly that we're even having the conversation. But combine that with the agenda, the social justice, the transformation, the fundamental transformation of America that Barack Obama has been pushing for all of these years, and these are predictable events, as sad as they are.
Well, it's really tragic when you see somebody like William Johnson, and I know that you played this clip on your own show just a few minutes ago, but he's the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations. Yeah. One of the things he said in an interview this morning was, it's a war on cops, and the Obama administration is the Neville Chamberlain of this war. He seems to be putting blame, as some other police advocates have been putting blame, on the Obama administration and on the left for inciting this sort of thing by rhetoric, which is so ironic, Mark, because this is the same political side of the fence that was all over Sarah Palin for the Gabby Gifford shooting and was all over the NRA for the Orlando Jihad. Why aren't they discussing rhetoric right now, do you think?
Oh, gosh. Because they're supporting a racist agenda. And it's a tough conversation to have. It really is a tough conversation, but it's one we have to have, Janet. I don't know. I can't get inside their head and tell you why they're not when it comes to this rhetoric, but we've been hearing this rhetoric now for what, 7.5 years? Coming from this administration? And you know, I'm glad you brought up Sarah Palin. When you talk, you know, remember the targets on the map and all this stuff?
I do. Yep,
okay?
I do.
And when you see this, and when you hear the President of the United States come out and instantly pivot from what all of America saw, which was a Black, racist, Democrat, felon in possession of a gun. And what does the man do? He pivots to gun control. And the two of us discussed it briefly on my show just a few minutes ago. But the fact of the matter remains that Barack Obama is pushing a political agenda. This is a part of that agenda that he's been unable to grasp. He hasn't been able to get his hands on it, okay? Because good law-abiding, gun-owning Americans by the 150-plus million haven't allowed him to get his hands on it. That he doesn't mind politicizing these issues, as he said, about six, 8 months ago after the Oregon shooting, that it was high time we did politicize these issues. And that's what he's doing.
Well, what's really tragic about it is what gets lost in the discussion. There is no doubt that there have been incidents across America in which innocent people have unfortunately been the, you know, the recipients of violence or right. shooting by a police officer. And we know not all police officers are perfect by any means, any more than all civilians are perfect by any means. No civilians are perfect. No cops are perfect. But on the other hand, when you turn it into a moment in which you can politicize it and move forward and unfortunately use increasingly intense rhetoric that will inspire certain elements of society to become violent. Isn't that the time to say, okay, whoa, let's just stop for a moment and let's talk about both things. On the one hand, we don't want to have ever a situation in which a police officer is using deadly force unnecessarily and illegally. On the other hand, we need to appreciate that blue lives matter as well, and to appreciate that these are police officers who are laying their lives on the line every single day, just like those police officers did last night, Mark. Those police officers were running toward the shots, right. not away. How brave do you have to be able to do that? And several of them were shot, lost their lives, were wounded. So why can't we have this conversation about the fact that we want every life to matter, we want justice across the board, and we don't have to go after each other over race?
Because the Obama administration, Janet, sees this, there's a disconnect. There's a separate America. He's dividing America. You've got white privilege over here, and you've got social justice over here, which is in response to white privilege over here. And because it doesn't fit, it's the round peg, the square hole, the whole nine yards, it doesn't fit that political narrative that this group, that these gangsters in the White House, and if you don't believe me, my gosh, just go back and look at what happened over the last week with Hillary Clinton. The fix is in, the corruption in this country, it just doesn't fit that narrative. And it's frightening to think that there are people out there who can't see the irony here. Let's go to the irony of what happened in Dallas yesterday, shall we? Take a look at this. Those very cops you just described, those heroes, those men and women in blue out on the streets in Dallas, protecting the rights, the free speech rights of people who hate them.
Right. Well, right,
exactly. What does that tell you about the men and women who are wearing the uniform, who are, well, I mean, how do you say it? Sheriff David Clark said it today, the cop hater in chief. That's Sheriff Clark's words. I've used those same lines before. Yeah. As they go after police officers, that irony is not lost on me, and I hope to God it's not lost on the irony of the individuals who are listening to this program and watching what's happening on the news.
Well, when you're talking about irony, Mark, one of the biggest ironies of all is the fact that if they really cared about gun violence and about crime and about Black Lives Mattering, which they do,
they'd be in Chicago.
Why aren't they in Chicago? This is my hometown. How many homicides have to take place in Chicago? Why isn't Black Lives Matter? Why isn't the left concentrating on the city of Chicago? How many lives have been lost? You would know, I'm sure, in detail because you cover this all the time on your show.
Yeah.
But that's Black Lives do matter. So why don't we go to Chicago and talk about that as well as all the other incidents? That's where they really become transparent, I think, in the politicizing of this entire scenario and how they choose to protest this but not protest the other.
Again, because it doesn't fit the narrative. Chicago, great example. Glad you brought it up. And by the way, as we're speaking right now, reports are breaking right now that officers in several states are being targeted in attacks. In fact, there's one down in Valdosta, Georgia, just down the road from me a little ways, where an individual called 911 and ambushed the cop when he got there. This is to be expected, as we talked about earlier. And Janet, we will have this conversation again. It is going to continue. But when you have a situation where you have a president of the United States of America who will ignore the facts. Well, I got to go back. Let me go back to Chicago. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. I got so many things I want to talk with you about. Not enough time to get there. Let me go back to Chicago. 62 people shot in Chicago over the week, over June. 62.
Terrible.
But it's black on black crime. So ask yourself this question. Do Black Lives Matter? If Black Lives Matter, why isn't Black Lives Matter opening up a headquarters in Chicago?
Yeah, right.
Because it isn't about Black Lives Matter. That's just the name that the group has taken. And again, ask yourself this question. Has it only been black people killed by rogue police officers? And look, as you said, and I'll go a step further, there are bad judges, bad lawyers, bad doctors, bad Indian chiefs. There's someone from every walk of life in a prison cell somewhere because they're bad.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
There are bad accountants. There are bad cops. Here's the deal. If you don't want to run into a bad cop, don't break the law. Michael Brown and most of the cases that Black Lives Matter are following, and the reason I don't talk about them on Armed American Radio, is because these were people who were involved in criminal activity at the time of their encounter with law enforcement.
Right, which is
they
not
were
often
career
discussed.
Criminals.
Right.
They were career criminals committing crimes at the time of their encounter. Now, when did that become bad advice, Janet, to tell people if you don't want to run into a bad officer who might do you harm and could cost you your life, don't break the law.
Don't That's exactly
break
it.
The law.
Right, right, now, right. And for situations in which, for example, the Castile situation in Minnesota, very troubling. They're still doing an investigation into that.
Very
that
troubling
was terrifying
scenario.
That was terrifying for me as a concealed carry permit holder to say here he was allegedly. I mean, we have to get the facts once the investigation is completed. But so far, what we know from what the girlfriend is claiming is that he was reaching for his ID.
Right.
As instructed by the police officer, he told the police officer, as he should, that he had a concealed carry permit and apparently a handgun, reaching for his ID, and he shot. I mean, that one almost seems to be getting less attention than Alton Sterling, because that seems to be a more troubling narrative for the left to work through, because it involves a concealed carry holder.
It does. And, you know, you've got some members of the NAACP out there saying, where are the gun groups now? You know, coming to the aid of this because this guy was a concealed carry. Well, I'll tell you where they are. I'm a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. And our leader, Mr. Alan Gottlieb, put a press release out today that the USA Today, believe it or not, wrote a great piece on. It's been picked up by the Washington Free Beacon. Stephen Gutowski wrote a great story on it because we're watching this case like a hawk. This was an individual, and this is a teaching moment for everyone with a concealed carry permit of how to handle. No color doesn't come into this. Race doesn't matter. This was an individual up there in Minnesota who was exercising his right to bear arms lawfully. And mind you, he was under no lawful obligation under Minnesota law to notify the police officer he was carrying a firearm. He Right. did it because he felt it was the right thing to do. Now, as you said, I'm going to hold back. We'll be talking about it more on Armed American Radio on Sunday and throughout the week next week on the daytime show as more facts emerge. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus yet. But this is a very troubling case. Now, I want you to take a listen to what Every Town for Gun Safety has to say. I get their emails, and I want to ask you, if you want to see what the enemy's doing, join their mail list. Take a listen to this. Mark, a gunman opened fire on a peaceful protest last night in Dallas, killing 5 police officers, injuring 7 more, in the deadliest day for U.S. law enforcement since 9/11. This week, we've seen how gun violence takes many forms across the country, from Louisiana to Minnesota to Texas, and the common factor is that there are far too many families suffering today because their loved ones' lives were senselessly taken. Janet, this despicable organization is now fundraising, and what they're calling gun violence are 2 instances of law enforcement using their weapons.
Oh, man. It's incredible. And as you mentioned before, Mark, it's impossible for us to have enough time to get to everything we want to discuss. But armedamericanradio.org, Mark Walters, the great host and defender of the Second Amendment. Always great to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, and keep up the fight, Janet. Appreciate it.
All right. You do the same. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Janet Mefford in for Tony today. We're going to go to a break. Back in a moment. Stay with us.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the President nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the President has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
The signs of America's cultural decay are everywhere. Take the issue of religious liberty as an example. The First Amendment to the Constitution guaranteed Americans freedom of religion. Later, someone introduced the concept of freedom from religion, and the more limiting phrase freedom of worship became popular, implying we need to keep our freedom inside the church. With your help, the American Family Association stands against such subtle revisions. Our most recent efforts to spread the voice of Christian America include an expansion of the American Family Radio Network into 8 more cities with the potential for 2.5 million new listeners. Also, American Family Studios has begun production on a new feature-length documentary, The God Who Speaks, Reaffirming Biblical Authority. The cost is high, but standing by and doing nothing could cost us even more. Pray today and be listening Tuesday, July 12th for more information. Because America cannot wait.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
We are back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Janet Mefford in today for Tony. Well, yesterday, the House Oversight Committee had a chance to put FBI Director James Comey on the hot seat over his decision not to recommend criminal charges for Hillary Clinton over her homebrew email server. And in the course of the hearing, we learned a lot about what the FBI had not done to dive into the evidence regarding Mrs. Clinton. But Comey did talk about the fact that Mrs. Clinton told the truth throughout the FBI session to lawmakers. That's amazing. Well, anything come of this new push to investigate Mrs. Clinton for perjury? Well, we're going to get some thoughts on it all now from Chris Farrell, who is Director of Investigations and Research for Judicial Watch and serves on its board of directors. Chris, just great to have you here.
Great to be on. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. You guys at Judicial Watch have been absolute heroes on what you've uncovered and reported to us all about the Clinton email scandal. What do you think were the biggest takeaways from yesterday's hearing? What stood out for you?
Well, what's sad is that Mr. Comey has disgraced himself. He's taken the position as director of the FBI. He's now in a position really where he's professionally compromised. And I don't know that he can continue in that position because I think he has squandered that special trust and confidence of the American people, certainly the rank and file within the FBI. And there are thousands of people in government, whether it's the intelligence community, law enforcement, the armed forces, who know exactly that everything he said about how people would be treated and evaluated and dealt with a gross security violation like this, how they would be dealt with, and then how Mrs. Clinton has been. So
right,
he's in an untenable position.
Well, he is. And you guys have even pointed out this Brian Nishimura. This is a Navy reservist who handled classified materials inappropriately. This was Comey's FBI who helped convict this person, and Mrs. Clinton has done far worse. So, you know, just being able to connect one to another, that seems to be something this administration just isn't willing to do.
You are correct. And Mr. Comey's in a rough spot. I don't know. I don't want to overstate it, but really, I don't know how he sleeps. I don't know how he can do it.
Yeah, I don't either.
The reason I say that is because my past professional experience before, I've been at Judicial Watch for 17 years, but before coming to Judicial Watch, I was a special agent of Army Counterintelligence. I've done these sort of national security crime investigations. So I'm not guessing at this. I mean, I've done it for a living. So I know what's required. I know what the standards are. And And this is so far 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
It is, for sure. Now, one of the things that was brought up yesterday in the hearing, Jason Chaffetz talked about this, the fact that they need to investigate Mrs. Clinton on this issue of lying to Congress under oath. She had declared to Congress that she had neither sent nor received emails that were classified, and even Comey acknowledged that that wasn't true. What do you make of the fact that in so many instances, Director Comey was asked, did you investigate this about Mrs. Clinton? Did you investigate this? No, 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 no. What in the world is the problem with the FBI, that the FBI would just reduce the investigation of Mrs. Clinton to such a narrow field and then fail to recommend criminal charges?
Yeah, they put blinders on. They advertised it as a comprehensive review, and yet they play these little semantic word games, the sophistry about, well, we only received a referral from the IG, the intelligence community, with respect to State Department, and I mean, artificial constraints, things that no one who's really serious about looking at a very, very grave national security crime, you know, that this top secret special access program information that Mrs. Clinton essentially gave to our enemies, this is very grave, very damaging to our national security. And To play little word games over it, it's disingenuous. It's really horrible.
It is, and it puts all of us, the thing that bothers me the most is it really does compromise national security for all of us, and to have so many people who are all on board electing Hillary for president, and the fact that she's already played fast and loose with our national security before doesn't seem to be a barrier for a lot of voters. Now, what about the FBI perjury investigation that Jason Chaffetz said, you know, you'll have our sign-off on that in a few hours when he was speaking to Director Comey yesterday. Is there really enough time, though, for the FBI to go through and investigate a potential perjury violation by Mrs. Clinton before the election?
Right, a referral from Congress, Mr. Comey is not compelled to act on it. He can, you know, take it under advisement, which is, you know, a nice way of saying drop dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't anticipate any great action coming out of the FBI on this. I mean, what your listeners should be encouraged by is that, you know, we just finished taking 7 sworn depositions of people like Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills.
Right.
And we just asked the court this afternoon to depose Mrs. Clinton, to set a date for that.
Good.
And I know this is shocking, but we're going to do it under oath.
Wow.
The FBI doesn't want to do that. But, so, I mean, Judicial Watch will continue forward with our litigation. We have open, active cases. Mrs. Clinton is up to her neck in them. And so regardless of what Mr. Comey decides to do or not, we are driving forward.
I love that, and we're dependent upon you for what you've been doing. You've done, as I mentioned before, fantastic work. What else is in the offing down the road? There has been discussion from Congress about barring Mrs. Clinton and her aides from having any access to national security, you know, having the security clearance and so forth. Will that really solve it, though? If she's elected president and nothing happens to her on the criminal side, she's going to have access to absolutely everything. Is there a way to stop that, short of making sure she doesn't get elected?
The short answer is no. Presidents are not granted security clearances. The political act of making them president, it sort of, you know, gives them by their office, it gives them the authority for, you know, seeing everything and knowing everything,
right,
with respect to our classified program. So the notion that you're going to have a president without a security clearance is preposterous. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Now, other characters around her having people like Huma Abedin, Cheryl Mills, they're certainly subject to restrictions and revocation of clearance and all sorts of other measures, but not the political actor who would be elected to office now.
A very important fact to keep in mind. Well, we're so grateful for the great work of Judicial Watch. Chris Farrell joining us. Chris, thanks a lot. We really appreciate what you do and appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. Great to be on.
All right, you take care. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, 866-372-7234. We're going to take your calls toward the end of the hour, but keep that number on hand, 866-372-7234. There's a lot more to come here this hour. Stay with us. I'm Janet Mefford. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be back right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, the British pound hit a 31-year low. 31-year low. That's pretty significant. And it seems like this whole idea of the Britain exit is really starting to come back into play. We had this huge breather as we saw the markets here in the U.S. begin to kind of ignore everything that was going on with the British exit and kind of rally up towards the end of the month, right? The end of the second quarter. Same thing with European stocks. European stocks, the stock markets that are likely to get hit the hardest by any real volatility on the downside, also rallied up. But here's the thing. We continue to see issues in France. We continue to see issues in Italy. And we continue to see major problems and concerns in the Asian markets. We're seeing exports and manufacturing drop significantly in Japan and continuing to do so. We're seeing the ports in China beginning to overflow and now manufacturing slowing down even more in China. So this is going to weigh, obviously, on the oil sector as far as some issues in demand, but also all of this on top of a new awakening that the exit by Britain out of the Eurozone is possibly not a very good thing for the overall markets. And like I've been saying for a long time, it is the financial markets that we have to be really concerned about.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
All right, we are back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Janet Mefford. In today for Tony, our toll-free number, 866-372-7234. We'll be taking your calls toward the end of the hour. There is so much to dive into today. I'm trying to act as quickly as I can to get everything in. We'll never get everything in, but we're getting in a lot of the important news of the day, and we do want to hear from you. So 866-372-7234. Well, there have been some unsettling recent developments when it comes to the LGBT agenda, both here at home and also around the world. Just recently, the UN Human Rights Council voted to appoint an independent monitor to address homosexual and transgender discrimination around the world, something that has been called a milestone and the UN's most overt expression of gay rights as human rights. And as the LGBT agenda moves forward here in America, another activist group has now put out a new report. It's called The Enemies of Equality, which targets, among others, our own Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council. So we're going to get some ideas and thoughts on the latest on this global LGBT front with Peter Sprague, who is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council. And Peter, it's great to talk to you again. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Janet.
It's great to have you here. All right. First of all, I want to get into the Enemies of Equality report because this does involve the Family Research Council. It does involve our friend Tony Perkins. Tell us what is going on with this particular report that has just come out.
Well, this is a new organization that has issued a report, Enemies of Equality, which is, to those of us who are within the pro-family movement, it's almost comical to read how others describe us sometimes, because actually a Washington Post columnist reporting on this actually referred to us as the vast right-wing conspiracy. seriously, not ironically. And this group issued a report, but also a chart showing this sort of octopus-like web of relationships among a lot of pro-family organizations. Well, certainly, we are in coalition with a lot of other organizations. We work together to the extent that we can, but there is no sort of mastermind manipulating the whole process the way that this organization would have you believe. And I would note that they make reference to, with regard to Family Research Council, they make reference to Southern Poverty Law Center designating us as an extremist group or a hate group, but they don't make any reference to the fact that we were a victim of an act of terrorism because of that listing back in 2012 when a gunman who found our name on the SPLC website came in, intent on killing everyone in our building, but and was stopped only by the heroism of my friend and colleague Leo Johnson. So, you know, it's just one more way of them trying. It's ironic they accuse us of stigmatizing them. It's one more way of them trying to stigmatize what is a perfectly normal movement and a group and set of organizations that are in coalition with one another, sometimes agreeing, sometimes disagreeing on strategy, but working towards the same overall goal.
Yes, absolutely. And it's very significant what you said there about the fact that a homosexual organization volunteer who is an activist was the one who came to your building and he was intent upon committing mass murder and was, as you mentioned, a domestic terrorist and charged and convicted. So when we look at this and then we look at what the UN just did, appointing this independent person who's going to go around the world ostensibly and enforce homosexual rights around the world. Do you see this, Peter, as a way of advancing the agenda, particularly against the countries that still have a concept of Christian morality? It's awkward, I'm sure, for the UN to try to do that with Islamic countries, but you think of countries in Africa in particular, a country like Brazil and so forth. What do you make of the fact that the UN is now equating gay rights with human rights?
Well, it's interesting because the dynamics at the United Nations are very interesting because there's sort of an international bureaucracy, just like there's a federal bureaucracy here at home, which tends to be very liberal and promoting these liberal causes. But the fact is that the United Nations is not governed, or it's not supposed to be governed by the bureaucrats. It's governed by the member nations. And the vast majority of the 192, I believe it is, member nations of the United States are not sympathetic with this left-wing sexual revolution agenda promoting homosexuality and so forth. And so if anybody tells you that LGBT rights are human rights, that is not a principle that has ever been agreed to by the General Assembly of the United Nations or enshrined in any generally accepted treaty or international obligation. However, there is this effort by bureaucrats to insinuate that it is. And unfortunately, this UN Human Rights Commission did agree to the appointment of a special rapporteur, as they call it, some people have referred to it as the LGBT czar,
right,
who will kind of be a super bureaucrat within the UN promoting this agenda. Now, you know, we continue to work with organizations like our friends at CFAM, the Center for Family and Human Rights, who work extensively at the UN, and with countries that continue to support pro-family policies to try to stand against this agenda internationally. But,
Very good. Well, we're going to need that as this agenda pushes across the world. Well, Peter Sprague, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council. Always good to talk to you, Peter. Thanks again.
Thank you, Janet.
All right, you take care. It's Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in for Tony Perkins. We're going to come back right after this. Stay with us.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
It's 2 a.m., and Tommy's raspy cough has become a horrible-sounding bark. You can go rushing into the night with your little one for an ER visit, or you can teleconference with a board-certified pediatrician to evaluate Tommy, give you advice, and write a prescription if necessary. MD Live is a network of board-certified physicians available anytime and anywhere. Information about MD Live is available at hcbenefits.com. hcbenefits.com.
What's at stake in this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
We are back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins as he's taking a little bit of time off. And boy, what a news day. We've got so much going on. We've been discussing the LGBT agenda going global and also continuing to put its tentacles into absolutely everything here at home. We've also talked about the hearings yesterday, the House Oversight Committee, which put FBI Director James Comey on the hot seat. And of course, the biggest news of the day right here in Dallas, where I'm broadcasting from, was the massacre of these police officers, five police officers, as well as seven wounded and two more civilians who were wounded. We are in prayer for the city of Dallas right now and for the families of those victims of the shootings. It is a terrible tragedy. And as Christians, we really need to consider this from a biblical perspective. And we're going to get some thoughts on it all now from Dr. Ronnie Floyd, who has served as president of the Southern Baptist Convention and is senior pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas. Dr. Floyd, it's great to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Janet, for the opportunity to be on with you.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I know that you have remarked in the past that one of the greatest sins in our nation today is the sin of racism. I know you have been very active in convening a panel on racial unity, and this has been an issue that has been very concerning to you. What is your reaction to what occurred last night in Dallas?
Well, what we observed is that beginning in Ferguson, Missouri, with what happened, that became the tipping point of the racial crisis in America. And ever since then, we have seen it absolutely go beyond our own imagination, especially in the last 48 hours. To think what happened in the greater St. Paul area, to think what happened in Baton Rouge, and then Dallas was just unimaginable.
Yes.
And taking place on live television, it's just pretty amazing that we are where we are. And we have never been where we are in recent decades. And we need leadership. We need a move of God. We need all kind of things happening right now in this country.
I agree completely. You know, you think of what the Apostle Paul wrote in Galatians 3, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. That is what unites us as human beings. We are all sinners. We come from different races, different ethnicities, but through the cross of Jesus Christ and through his atoning work and resurrection, we are united in Christ. How do we get out the gospel at a moment like this to say, this is how we can be truly reconciled? When we are reconciled to God, the Father through Christ, we can be reconciled with one another.
I think we need this first the real commitment that we've all been made in the image of God, and we're all sinners, as you said. Therefore, we have a need for reconciliation with God. And the moment we have reconciliation with God, then we begin to work toward reconciliation with one another. And this is the real challenge, and the church needs to be the model for this, Janet. One of the reasons we're seeing what we're seeing in the country today is that still to this day, one of the most segregated hours in America is the 11 o'clock hour in many of our churches across America. Hmm. And if we're going to be a church that reaches all people, this means that that's not determined by someone's culture or by someone's color of skin. We need to understand Jesus died for all, and he wants his family to literally look like what heaven's going to look like. And that's what our goal of our churches should be. We need to look like the heaven that one day we're going to experience for all of eternity.
That's excellent. I agree completely. How are you praying right now for the victims' families, for the loved ones of these officers who were slain, and for those who are very concerned and about some of these shootings that have taken place? Obviously, people have different political opinions, but how do you think as Christians we ought to be praying for our nation right now?
I think we need to pray strongly against the stronghold of racism in the country. We cannot underestimate what is going on and the horrific sin of racism in this nation. And what we're seeing is it's almost like we're seeing like this sin is so close to being defeated, but Satan is not going to give up easy. And every time we make progress, it's almost like, okay, I'm going to show you. And we as believers need to pray down against the stronghold of racism. We also need to pray for the Spirit of God to give us confidence and not fear. African-American men and women are scared. Police officers are fearful for their lives. America is fearful because of where we are. The church needs to be there giving comfort and strength and confidence. And I would just ask, Janet, that every church that's listening in today, pastor and lay people, contact your pastor today. Encourage him to spend time in prayer for our country this coming Sunday. This is a critical time. I told our staff team on a long text message today to our leadership team, this is a solemn moment. We do not need to race by this moment. God has given us this moment to bear forth his image and to bear forth for his glory. And we need to seize the moment and not run past it, act like it's just another issue in the country. It's not another issue in the country. We have had tragedy upon tragedy upon tragedy happen in the last 48 hours of this nation. We need to stop. We need to talk to God. And we need to plead with God to move on behalf of his people in this nation.
Well, we certainly do. Well, we appreciate what you are doing, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, from the Southern Baptist Convention, also senior pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas. Appreciate you, Dr. Floyd, and we will continue to pray for the nation and appreciate your words of wisdom today. God bless you, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Janet. Have a great day.
All right, you do the same. Our number here at Washington Watch, 866-372-7234, and now we are opening up the phone lines to you. We have talked quite a bit about what has gone on last night in Dallas, what is continuing to happen today. All of this news that is tumbling in on us, the House Oversight Committee. Yesterday, FBI Director James Comey put on the hot seat. So much to discuss, and we want to hear from you. So our phone number is 866-372-7234. Anything you want to talk about that we've been discussing this hour is fair game. So let's first go to my home state of Illinois. Let's talk with Perry. Perry, it's great to have you here on Washington Watch. Welcome.
Thank you. You guys said I could call with any questions I might have, concerns. I'm a big Bible reader and stuff, and I know Jesus said that said that no kingdom divided against itself can stand.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like our government now is deliberately trying to divide our country. And I, even though I'm a Jesus freak, I'm still a big patriot. And even when we've proven, and so found evidence that people are doing bad things to our country and everything, it seems like they've set themselves up in key positions the enemy has to where they just excuse themselves. But what do we do to protect ourselves from our own government?
Oh, man. Thanks, Perry. That's the $64,000 question. There is a divide. I unfortunately have to say that there is obviously a group of people in this country, more than one group of people in this country, who really take advantage of the fact that if you divide people, there are things to be gained politically. I hate that. I don't think as a Christian that that's appropriate. And I think it really goes back to what we were just discussing a couple of moments ago with Dr. Floyd, the fact that we as Christians, we are the ones who can really talk about reconciliation because we have good news for everybody. We have been reconciled to God. We have a world that needs to know about the cross of Jesus Christ, and that through that cross, Christ reconciled us to God, and therefore we can be reconciled with one another, and we can seek justice in all the instances where we need to seek it, and yet we don't have to resort to violence, and we don't have to resort to a race war. That is the last thing this country needs, is to be devolving into a race war. And we must stand up against people who, for political reasons, may think that a race war has advantages. And I thank you for the call, Perry. I even hate saying that because it's so depressing to even consider. But we appreciate the call. Let's go next to Missouri. We've got Pat on the line also talking about what is going on in Dallas. Pat, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to stress this. I think as far as Fathers of Christ is concerned, we need to stress that there is only one race, the human race, and as C.S. Lewis said, we're all sons of Adam and daughters of Eve, and I think that that would break down some of the static even within the churches, because we don't want to have the mindset there's only one race, and so we're different colors,
right,
but just one race. And so I think if we do that, and also as far as Black Lives is concerned, Black Lives Matters, they're not focused on the blacks killed by blacks, nor blacks killed in abortion, and
right.
So all this division is causing the nation to weaken, and that makes us vulnerable to a dictator.
Well, that's the problem. Pat, that is a wonderful point, and I'm glad that you called and made that point, that we are all one human race. That's the answer. And to say, you know, we all are human beings created in the image of God. We all should stand up for one another, and we all have to repudiate violence, and we all have to learn to get along. And so let's do that. Let's work toward that. Let's not continue to be dividing one another, but to genuinely seek peace and pursue it, as Scripture says. Thank you so much, Pat, for the call. Let's go to Texas. We've got Carol on the line, and we are so glad you're able to join us, Carol, here on Washington Watch. Welcome.
Thank you. I live just north of Dallas, and I wasn't even aware of what happened until this morning. And I literally cried and prayed all the way to work. It breaks my heart.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
I don't understand this kind of hate. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and I remember the marches and Dr. Martin Luther King and those things. And I feel as if we are back, but at that time before, when things were so bad.
Right.
It's like we've gone back, you know, 50 years.
Yes, gone backwards.
And I guess my thing is, you know, here we have a president who received a Nobel Peace Prize, but
yeah.
Yet under his watch, we've seen more dissension and more division and more, especially between the races.
Right. Well, and that's the real tragedy, Carol. Thank you for the call. That's the real tragedy of it, is that when he came on board in 2008, he was going to create this purple America, right? Bringing together everybody, healing racial harmony, the oceans will rise and everything will be perfect. And we're going to have a fundamental transformation of America. And unfortunately, we are where we are right now. And unfortunately, we have had President Obama talking about gun control. As if that's the issue, as if gun control was the issue after the Orlando Jihad. It's always something different than what it really ought to be when it comes to a national conversation. And it's a tragedy. But what we can do as citizens is continue to get the country back on track by continuing to discuss what the issue ought to be. And that is the issue of bringing the country back together and genuinely healing it instead of just throwing around that kind of political rhetoric that doesn't get us anywhere. Thanks a lot, Carol. Appreciate the call. Let's go next to Oklahoma. We have Andrew on the line. Andrew, go ahead. It's great to have you.
Okay, great. Hey, I'm James Comey. I think he may be afraid for his life or for his family. If you cross the Clintons, you may not live to tell about it.
Yep. Could be. Who knows? Nobody really knows. I mean, people were making jokes the other day that maybe he should have blinked in Morse code, like that YouTube video of that Vietnam POW. I don't know if you've ever seen that video, but he was saying one thing and he was doing Morse code with his eyes that was basically saying, get me out of here. People were making jokes about that. But I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I was hopeful with Comey because he has had such a history of, you know, a good reputation, that Comey would get up and do the right thing, or at the very least stand up and say, I resign because I'm not going to be able to get what I need from the Justice Department. I don't know what's happened behind the scenes. I doubt any of us will ever know. But what do you think ought to happen now, Andrew? Do you think that Comey needs to resign at this point?
Absolutely. Yeah, he should. He can't. That'd take him off the hook. Because he hasn't. 40 years ago, I had a top secret crypto security clearance.
Oh, wow.
I know how to handle classified information. We didn't have emails back then. It was all on paper. But there are ways to handle it and ways not to handle it. They weren't handled properly, of course, as we all know.
Right.
But I think Comey is just, I think he's scared.
Well, he very well maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has a right to be.
People die if
they cross the Clintons.
Well, and what do you make of the fact that the discussion about Comey not being going forward with criminal charges or recommending criminal charges for Hillary Clinton was based on, oh, she didn't know. She just didn't know. I mean, she's setting up email servers in her house. She doesn't know, then she's not smart enough to be president if she didn't know that she shouldn't be disseminating classified information back and forth.
That's one of the first things they taught us about handling classified documents, even being careful about being on the telephone. Telephones pick up background noises.
Sure.
You don't leave. If you accidentally have classified documents on you, you're supposed to call and be escorted back to a secure area. That's the way it was 40 years ago. I can't imagine that things have changed that much. I think Comey may be afraid for his life or for his family's life.
Well, I certainly hope that's not the case, but appreciate you weighing in, Andrew. Thanks a lot for calling. We're going to try to squeeze in one more caller before we have to go. We may have to be very quick here, but Earl is calling from Virginia. Earl, welcome to Washington Watch. Very quickly, what's your comment? Hi, Earl, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, very quickly, Earl, what's your comment?
My comment is on the race issue. If people are educated that color is no black race, no white race, like the lady said, there's mm-hmm. one race.
Yep.
And the color divides this country. Because once you become black and white, then we call people Chinese, Japanese, or whatever their nationality is. There's no race.
Well, we're all created in the image of God. You're absolutely right, Earl. Thank you so much for calling in. Janet Mefford, winding things up today here on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. It's been great to be with you. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you tuning in. God bless you, and have a great rest of your day.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.